Okay, I don't know. Do we get right to it?
Irish. I really can't say it. It's kind of sad.
You know, it's funny. When I was thinking of the conceit for the cocktail tonight, I was thinking that this movie was called Irish Kiss.
Easier to say.
And then I was a little disappointed when I realized that's not the case.
Is that the name of our cocktail, though?
It could be, because I went on a chocolate theme here, thinking like a Hershey Kiss, but with an Irish twist. So that's
what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is. And I need you to stay with me, because it's Guinness, beer, and chocolate milk, essentially.
A combo you'd never expect.
No, but I hope it tastes good. The internet seems to think it would be a good idea to combine those things. So
let's do it.
Yeah, to the St. Patrick's Day.
To the Shamrocks and the Leprechauns.
To the Ireland. Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, not bad.
It's really not bad. I'm trying to pinpoint if it tastes like anything, but
it doesn't taste like beer, and it doesn't taste like chocolate milk. It's definitely, we've created something new here.
Like a Kahlua-esque vibe, kind of. Mm. Like the consistency, at least. Like it's
a little bit thicker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Guinness is a stout, so those are thicker beers in general. But I think that's probably why it pairs with a rich flavor like chocolate so well. I don't hate it. It's
pleasantly surprising, yes.
Yeah, you would not think to mix beer and milk.
You came out and you had the two glasses and it literally just looks like chocolate milk.
It does.
And you're like, here's the bottle for like preference. And I was like,
We need to be clear about what's going like what's going on here, because otherwise it just looks like a chocolate milkshake.
You'll see in our post. And it's got a nice aftertaste too.
Yeah, it goes down smooth.
It does.
Smooth. I like
very
it.
Very nice.
Oh good. I'm glad it worked out. So many of the times that I try to put cream and alcohol together, it curdles. So there's no curdling happening here.
No Dr. Curdle Jr. here. There-
Oh, Dr. Curdle Jr.
I was gonna say RIP, but it's like he's not dead.
I also was about to say that, and then I had to stop and think, did he die? Because it's possible that he did die at some point.
It's possible. I mean, right, there was a bomb and
right, but a lot of people didn't survive. He was in the 50s, wasn't he?
Yeah. Or no, Dr. Curdle was.
Right. But played by Dr. Curdle Jr. Because the original Dr. Curdle from the first season is dead.
Right.
Like, actually, the actor is dead. Why are we talking about Riverdale?
Because we do miss it. I mean, come on. We miss it.
I do, yeah. Yeah, I miss Riverdale. Anyway, we're not talking about Riverdale tonight. We're talking about a new rom-com that just dropped yesterday. On Netflix. Irish Wish.
Why is it that's horrible? I'm really upset at it looks nice. The font they chose, everything is lovely, but to try to say it, it's our second Irish countryside film within
I felt a lot of deja vu in this movie for sure.
There's actually one scene I'm like, is that the same bench they sat at?
It very well could have been.
Very well.
And it just upsets me because it wasn't that long ago that we were saying, man, we'd really love to go to Ireland. And now I'm like, man, I still really want to go to Ireland.
I really, really want to go to Ireland.
And there has just not been enough time to enact that since the last time I was thinking it.
Nope.
This is I Hate It. Let's watch. Already a little drunk. I'm Lisa.
I'm Dawn.
We're going to talk about this delightful St. Patrick's Day themed movie,
sure.
I guess again, it's really not about St. Patrick's Day that Leap Year wasn't really about Leap Year. It's just an Irish-based movie,
yeah,
starring Lindsay Lohan because we are here for her comeback. 100%.
Honestly, she did a great job. I mean, the
movie itself did not love, but I thought she did a great job.
She did. I think that's the one thing I'm always afraid of is how corny her acting's gonna be, but it's not. It's actually pretty good.
She comes across very genuine on the screen.
Yep.
Even when she's playing kind of corny roles, because this for sure was one. But I think there were elements of her character that frustrated me, especially towards the beginning of the movie. But again, it wasn't her fault necessarily. It was the writing of the character itself. So just general premise of this movie, Lindsay Lohan plays Madeline, who is a book editor / aspiring writer. And she has fallen head over heels in love with this author, Paul Kennedy, who she helped to write a best-selling novel. And she can't bring herself to tell him about her feelings for him. And he ends up falling for one of her closest friends, and they're going to get married. That's the beginning of the movie, right? Like, I'm not skipping anything.
No, you're not skipping anything. And I was just so silent because I honestly...
I just wanted to hear it all again.
You covered it perfectly.
Thank you.
But right off the bat, I did not think that that was a book party.
No, it seemed like a movie premiere.
I was like, what is happening?
The lights, the cameras.
And it was just a fucking book party. And right off the bat, you notice that she is very...
In the background,
timid, does not speak up. She loses her scarf in a taxi and just lets it go. Doesn't even try to get it back. It's like, oh, the scarf
What was she
going
to do? Did you want her to chase the cab down
the
street?
No, but just... Looking back now at, I guess, her pattern of not speaking up, it was one of those things of like...
Well, the scarf is lost forever.
That's gone. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah, no, she's just very timid around him and she wants to tell him her feelings. And it seems like her mom only knows this.
Yes.
By Jane Seymour.
Love her, but weird that she was in
this
movie
at all.
It
was a weird
role
for her.
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
Strange.
I didn't like it.
And I think maybe the only thing I don't love about Lindsay Lohan's casting in this role is that I have a really hard time believing that she is not capable of advocating for herself.
Right.
Like, she just doesn't look or give the vibe that she is meek and mild and doesn't understand.
Mm-mm. It seemed rough. Like, watching the acting, it's like she didn't want to be like that.
Right.
And she had to fight the urge to be a little more
right
aggressive.
She has to dim her own sparkle in this movie,
yeah,
for the first half of it or so, and it's very disconcerting to see. And I think another thing is that I feel like her behavior, especially in the beginning of the movie, is more reflective of a much younger person. And I don't know how old the people in the movie were supposed to be. We don't really have information about that, but the way that she leans on her mom for advice on what to do with men, the way that she just seems so unsure of herself, it feels like a 22, 23 year old girl who is just getting started in her life,
mm-hmm.
doesn't have a lot of world experience, and just doesn't really know how to handle herself. And that does not feel like the age group we're looking at.
No.
Nor does it feel like the woman that we're looking at.
No, and I mean, even we kind of find out later too, her job is pretty good. I mean, she's an edit, like
she's a book editor.
She's a book editor, but like she just, I don't want to say dumbs herself down. That's, but
she, yeah, she lets other people take credit for her own work.
She's an editor, but she literally wrote the book for him. Like, mm-hmm. that's what we are led to believe. We're basically told that at one point. But I did notice though, between the men, and obviously we'll get that there, but her submissiveness, for lack of a better word, with Paul compared to James.
Right. She acts like
she has more of a backbone. Yeah. She has more of a backbone and is a little more assertive when it comes to James than she is with the guy that she technically wants to be with.
I don't actually have a problem with this because I feel like maybe he brings it out in her.
He gives her like pushback and
yes, but in a playful way where she feels comfortable engaging, because I think the issue, and I have felt this personally in my own relationship history, if I have been like so head over heels into a guy, I'm overthinking what I'm saying, I'm second guessing the jokes I'm making, am I being funny enough, am I being cute enough? But with the guys that are really good for me and make sense for me, it comes so much easier,
mm-hmm.
and you feel comfortable enough to show your real self. And so I think that's the problem that Madeline is experiencing in this movie. It's just there's something that she already recognizes that is not clicking and not lining up between her and Paul. And she just keeps trying to make it work and it's not working. And that just makes her anxious and uncomfortable.
So her friends technically don't know her true feelings towards Paul yet.
Right, which feels stupid to me. Like,
very
why
weird.
Wouldn't
the
you
fact
tell?
That the mom knows more than the friends do is very odd.
That and because they've been friends forever. They've been friends since
like high school.
Yeah, grade school or whatever. So like it's weird that she hasn't told them. And it's weird that they haven't called her on it because she's not subtle.
I was going to say she's extremely
she's
obvious.
She's not subtle. She clearly is in love with this guy.
And I'll be honest, beginning of my notes, third line, I don't like Paul.
No, he very much reminded me of her fiance in the Falling for Christmas movie.
Yeah.
In that he was kind of
a dunce.
Yes, kind of an idiot, a little bit flamboyant.
Yeah.
In a way where you were like, this guy might be gay at some point.
100%. I mean, wardrobe alone.
Yes. He wore a plaid tuxedo. I mean, I know it's Irish, maybe.
I was going to say, I kind of liked that, but also.
But also, it's definitely more of a fashion statement than American men feel comfortable making.
Just like, you know, the Scottish will wear kilts to their weddings.
Yeah, and I find that sexy as fuck, but whatever.
So much leg.
Show me that leg hair, please. Anyway, but yeah, he's not likable, and it's hard to understand why Madeline likes him. But again, it's kind of relatable in an earlier period of my life when I used to go for guys that were similar to Paul. And then you're just kind of like looking back like, huh, why was I ever interested in that?
And it's got to be the proximity, too. You're yes. working so close with somebody.
On a romance novel.
Yeah. So that is a huge factor in this. And because in our eyes, right off the bat, like, we're like, no.
Yeah. Who is this doofus?
There is really nothing to this guy. Why does she like him? And then her friend Emma starts talking to him, and they seem to hit it off. And Emma's weird to me. I wasn't a big fan of Emma.
I honestly think there were a lot of not so great people in this movie because
it was a weird ensemble cast. I will say that.
Yeah, it was strange. And I thought that her friend Heather was the worst actor in the bunch.
Well, that's Aisha Curry.
Right.
Which was an interesting choice. She's not an actress, as far as I know.
What does she do?
I don't know, but she's Steph Curry's wife.
Oh, okay.
Basketball player Steph Curry.
Okay. I recognized her name for some reason.
Both Aisha Curry and Steph Curry are Lindsay Lohan's child's godparents.
Oh.
Which I don't know if it came from them getting close during this movie, or were they friends prior, because it is one of those where did this friendship come from right. type of deal. Because mm-hmm. I know it was somewhere on social media where they were at a game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Lindsay Lohan, her husband, Steph and Aisha Curry, and they're holding up a jersey that has the baby's name on it, whatever. And it's okay. like, love your godparents. And everybody's like, what? Yeah, like, where did this come from? But yeah, it was an interesting casting choice for honestly almost the whole movie, except for Lindsay Lohan, obviously, but pretty much the rest of the movie, I'm like, weird choices here.
Yes, it's almost like they blew their budget on Lindsay Lohan and Jane Seymour, mm-hmm. I suppose, and then they really couldn't scrap together the rest of the cast. However, with all that said, I was very smitten by James.
Thank you. Loved him. And then I'm like, what is he from? The most recent season of You.
Really? Oh, see, I haven't watched that yet. I need to watch it.
That's the only thing I recognize him from, but he also kind of gives me, he kind of looks like, oh my God, what's the actor's name? I should have wrote it down, but I didn't.
Oh,
remember in The Devil Wears Prada?
Yes.
The guy that tries to get with Anne Hathaway.
Simon.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He kind of looks like him a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Different hair, which I feel
different
like
hair, yeah, but
makes
like
a big difference.
Mannerisms.
Yeah. He's got some swagger.
Like, the swagger, the sarcasm, yeah. Just the way about him. I was like, oh, he kind of gives that mm-hmm. kind of a vibe. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was, smitten by him. I liked him a lot.
Yeah. I enjoyed him. And I wasn't.
He has a fun job, too.
Yeah. Cool job. He's a wildlife photographer. I mean, if you're gonna,
which is like comes out of nowhere, because why would that be relevant in a movie like this?
Well, only because they need the photographer. So we're jumping ahead here.
Sorry.
It's all right. So anyway, Emma and Paul hit it off at this book launch party. And I really did kind of like the transition that they did where she's like, oh, he gave me his phone number. And then Madeline is like, well, you know, it's not like it's a proposal. And then we skip months ahead in the calendar.
Like 4 or 5 months.
Yeah. And then they are getting married mm-hmm. in Ireland, of course. So I thought that was kind of like a fun way to
and it
do
was
that.
The corniness, too, because on the book cover was a picture of this one particular
lake.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
And he's explaining where it is and mm-hmm. all that. And she's like, well, hopefully you can bring me there someday. And sure enough. Yeah. So she gets the proposal and the transition was cool, but it was very like we didn't really get to see the initial reactions of like, say, Lindsay Lohan. Well, Madeline. I keep doing that.
I know, it's hard.
Of when it all happened.
I mean, we can kind of guess.
We can guess, yeah, but still it was like,
I still think it's kind of strange that it all goes down without Madeline confiding in her friends about the situation.
Or at least Heather, like, right, Heather?
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody knows. So nobody knows. Even really so
she doesn't have a fight. She really doesn't have an argument here because
Yeah, she lets it happen. Have you ever seen Something Borrowed? Is that the name of it? With
Kate Hudson.
Yeah. And Jennifer Goodwin. This feels like a very similar plot to that movie, but I don't know. And maybe as somebody who can empathize with Madeline, you can explain to me, is this a situation you could see yourself getting into? Would you feel uncomfortable intervening with a friend's relationship like this to say like, hey, like this makes me feel really awkward because I also love this man?
I'd tell somebody. I'd have to tell somebody, but the level at which I did, or I don't know, because I feel like I would then kind of realize, all right, you blew it. Like, it's your fault. You blew it. You didn't say anything. And they clearly have chemistry. Well, I didn't think they had chemistry. But
oh, yeah, no. No, no.
No, but I mean, for the sake of the story, they had chemistry. And
benefit of the doubt.
I should have said something when I should have said something, and it's too late, and it's really...
Right.
You know, it was shit or get off the pot, and I didn't, and I just...
Yeah, it doesn't
I'm not going to fuck up their shit because I fucked up.
It doesn't seem like Madeline gets to a place of acceptance with this, and that's the issue, is that she hasn't decided to just be happy for her friend. She just feels like she's been cheated out of something that should have been hers. So when they go to Ireland, first of all, she has the meet cute in the airport with James, where she is trying to pick up her luggage from the carousel, and she's so convinced that the suitcase is hers, and it is actually James, and she refuses to check the tag. He's like, if you would just look at the tag.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, and she's like, no, I know it's my suitcase. And by the way, it is a black suitcase.
Generic.
Very generic. Very suitcase looking.
Very suitcasey.
And she is somehow convinced that she knows it is hers, but it is his. And she runs into him again on the bus going to the wedding venue, or the house, I guess, the estate.
The estate.
The castle estate. So they have some banter back and forth, and it's good. They're cute together. They have good chemistry. And he teases her because he sees the book that she co-wrote with Paul. He's like, yo, he sucks. And she's like, well, I edited this book, so fuck you. So we think we'll never see him again, or she thinks she'll never see him again. She goes into the house, and they're getting ready for the wedding preparations and stuff. She is really not doing a great job of putting on a happy face for it. And they all go to the lake from the cover of the book the next day. It's her, Heather, Emma, Paul, and Paul's brother, Corey, who I thought I liked, but then he was really rude about her bridesmaid's dress not being there.
Oh, and I missed that, I think.
It was when they're talking, because her suitcase is lost, and they're all concerned about it, but only because her bridesmaid's dress is in there. And Paul's mom is like, oh, it's going to look so stupid. And then Corey's like, well, maybe she could stand off to the side, like a cheering section. And I was like, dude, fuck
you. Your input's not needed here.
Yeah, like you're irrelevant. So when they go to this lake, Paul and Emma and Heather and Corey go out on some rowboats. And Madeline's like, I'm just going to take a walk. So she goes on a little stroll.
Well, I mean, because it was two and two, she could have gotten on one of them, but she's
like, no. There was plenty of room in the boat.
There was, but she was just like,
you guys go. She would have third wheeled with either one of them. So, yeah, I understand that, but.
Yeah, I would have done the same thing, honestly.
And it's beautiful there. Like, a nice walk around would have been nice. So she wanders around. She finds this tree, this really beautiful, it looked like a cherry blossom tree.
It
did look
up, but it probably wasn't.
It probably wasn't. But there was a bench underneath, so she goes to sit on it. And she's just like lamenting her life and like how unfair everything is. And then this crazy lady pops up out of nowhere. Saint Bridget. And I did not like this woman.
And you know what? It's funny, because it's not like, I don't want to say I didn't like her, but I'm like, you just, like, this is where the corniness comes in. Because now it's like,
we're personifying the magic of the movie.
Yeah. So basically, this bench is a wishing bench, and if you sit on it and make a wish, your wish will come true. And it's like, okay, great.
She's got too much energy. She was very hyper. She was wearing this really pretty headscarf, but also, like, what the fuck? So Madeline makes her wish, and she wishes that she was marrying Paul Kennedy. And then she's like, is that it? Is that anything? I mean, nothing's different. So then St. Bridget conjures up a wind.
Yeah, she's like, can you just make it believable, like have like a gust of wind or something? So she does.
Yeah, which I wonder how it would have worked otherwise, because this gust of wind takes her back and puts her in bed somehow, and then she wakes up and is like, oh, that was a fucking weird dream. So like, how would that have happened otherwise?
Yeah.
But whatever. So she wakes up. She's thinking it's all a dream. But then she goes into her bathroom and Paul is in there taking a shower. And he's very unconcerned that she's seeing him naked. She is very concerned that she's seeing him naked. She's covering her eyes. He's like asking her for a towel. She's behaving very, very oddly. She stumbles out of the room and like runs into Emma. She's like, oh my God, I cannot let her know that Paul is in my room. Because she thinks that they're still getting married. They're having conversations about the wedding that are vague enough that they still think they're talking about each other's weddings. Mm-hmm. But it's eventually very clear to Madeline that something is wrong. So Paul pops out from behind her. He tries to kiss her and she's like, no, not in front of Emma.
Right.
And like the two of them go away. Heather comes by. She's like, I need to talk to you. And she pulls Heather into her room and she's like, I don't understand. I don't know what the fuck is happening. Yada, yada. Heather's like, you're marrying Paul. Like, why are you freaking out? And then when she realizes this, she's super happy.
Yeah.
She's super psyched about it. But then she doesn't really behave like she's
No,
happy.
She's still very timid about the whole thing because she's like,
right.
It still doesn't feel right.
Right.
Like in real life. Like, honestly, it doesn't feel right because it shouldn't be happening.
Okay, fair. But it's so awkward because I feel like she doesn't even really try, or like the fact that she has this reaction that she's so happy, but then she won't sit next to him at breakfast. Like he has to tell her to sit next to him at breakfast. You would think that if this was something she wished and dreamed about,
you'd be
and
all
she
about finally, it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like she doesn't want to kiss him, she doesn't want to touch him. I feel like she would hop right into bed with this guy to be like
she
Yo.
Still she feels very, you could tell she feels very guilty. Like there's a sense of guilt.
I don't know if it's guilt initially. I think it's confusion and just like the transition feels very strange because now she's still adjusting to a new reality. Plus, she has the memory of meeting James and how that kind of felt in the back of her mind. So I think she's processing, but I don't think she really feels guilty until later in the movie when she sees the impact that it's having on Emma.
I am surprised, though, that she's getting her wish, but they're still making the surrounding people still have
their feelings. Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, she gets her wish, but Emma's still crushing on him.
Right.
He's still kind of crushing on her. I mean, Heather's the same, basically. It was just weird to me that they still had that, because you would think that if it was her wish that like things would just be going
right
that way.
Right. Like, she would just get what she wants and everyone would deal with it. But it must be one of those universes where you know, you can't change anything in the past because like it'll just end up correcting itself back to what it needs to be in the future, whatever. Regardless. So she's thrown into this whole wedding situation now. So she's marrying Paul. Paul's mother is like, you need to wear this dress that has been in my family for generations.
Which honestly wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to
be. No, it looked nice. It looked nicer than the one in The Proposal. Is that the one with Betty White and Sandra Bullock? Yeah. It looked a lot nicer than that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the dress that
her mom,
Maddie, and her had picked out together. So, but of course, she's not going to say anything because she doesn't want to make waves. It's just a dress, yada, yada. But when she's at the store trying it on or, you know, getting it fitted, whatever, she sees St. Bridget like out the window and she's like a crazy person. She just starts running for her. And it leads her running directly into James in his car, who is just happening to be in the same place at the same time. And she recognizes him, but he does not recognize her because in this timeline of events, they did not meet at the airport. So, but they still have sort of a rapport. And then when her future mother-in-law comes up and everything, she's like, oh, you found a photographer, because I guess his camera's in the back seat. And they're like, oh, well, obviously what you did here was run out of the store and ambush this poor man in his car to beg him to be the photographer for your wedding. He tries to object, but she's like, I'll pay you a shit ton of money. So then he's like, all right.
And mind you, what's her name again?
Who?
St. Bridget.
Yeah.
She's fucking with her at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Visibly, like,
yeah,
you wanted this wish, but you're gonna learn that that's not really what
I have in my notes. What is this meddling fairy bitch up to? Because I did not well, know she was a saint.
Okay, so she, and also we find out that the reason that James is there is because he is going to be doing, he's the photographer for a sheep shearing competition.
Sure.
And there's an ad, you know, there's a poster for it in a window, and Saint Bridget goes and puts a canceled thing sticker across it.
So he's out of a job.
He's out of a job. So that is just
he's available. Yeah, he's available for this wedding. So it's just like, Saint Bridget, did you really grant her wish, or are you just trying to fix her life?
Right, like showing her her wishes.
All she shouldn't be trying to get her together with James. That was not her wish. If her wish was, I want to marry my true love, thinking in her head that it was Paul, but it was actually James, then it would make more sense that Saint Bridget is trying to push her into this other marriage. Whatever. So anyway, Paul wants to get some PR couple shots. So he's like, let's spend a day driving around Ireland with our photographer here to scout some locations. But that night when he gets into bed,
that was pretty funny,
actually. Maddie is so surprised that she is sharing a bed with someone that she beats the fucking shit out of him.
Elbows him and smacks him right in the eye.
Yeah, and I guess he's like real butthurt about that, so then he doesn't want to go location scouting. So, la-di-da, I guess that means Maddie and James have to go out together.
What movie does this did this whole scene remind you of?
Oh, you're smiling at me like I should know.
I feel like you should. Okay. I want you to get it so bad.
No, now I'm not. Like, you're putting way too much pressure on me to get it. I can't think of any movie I've ever seen in my whole life. Just tell me, I can't think of it.
27 Dresses.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah.
Where she, Katherine Heigl, has to go with Ed Burns because the sister's busy and then has to do that stuff. But then James Marsden comes and then takes over and there's a rainstorm and they hydroplane and they go to the bar.
Hydroplane. You're going to hydroplane. No, I'm not.
Like, yeah. I just wanted them to start playing Benny and the Jets.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Okay. Yes. Sorry.
It was just, I got a little head, but it was very similar.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, very tropey in the way that we're used to rom-coms being tropey. The only thing that was not tropey was that they did have two rooms for them at that pub, so they didn't have to share a bed. I was having leap year flashbacks. I was like, that's what I'm God.
Like, that's one thing that I found, like, is that an Ireland thing that pubs have rooms?
Yeah, I think they're more like way stations for travelers and stuff. Like, I think it's very common to have, maybe not so much in the big cities, but definitely out in the countryside, because people would be using them as stopping points, I guess, on their way to somewhere else.
True.
So anyway, my favorite part about this was that they go to the Cliffs of Moher, which is
gorgeous,
one of the most famous locations in Ireland, period. And she's like, oh my God, it's the Cliffs of Moher. And James is like, you've heard of it? And it's like, fucking everybody has. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it was.
This is a major tourist destination. Even Paul says it later. He's like, oh, that tourist trap? And it's like, yeah, like everybody goes to the Cliffs of Moher. How do
you not, honestly?
You did not know about the Cliffs of Moher?
No, I said, how do you not
know? I was like, oh, I just shat on you for like 3 minutes. Sorry.
And if you did, though, I deserve it.
Seriously, it's like not knowing about the Grand Canyon or something like the Great Wall of China. Oh, you've heard of the Great Wall of China? Stupid. So anyway, when they're trying to get back, there's a rainstorm and then there's a tree that's blocking the road. So they have to stay overnight at this pub. They have a really nice conversation about their lives and their jobs and whatever. And James is clearly uncomfortable talking about his personal life, which she calls them out on. But then they play darts and they have like a moment of sexual tension. She's like, I'm getting married in 2 days. They dance together because like...
they have great chemistry, actually.
Yeah, no, they were good together. They wake up the next morning and the car won't start. So they're further delayed in their return. And it's now the day before the wedding. They have to make it back for the rehearsals. Also, her mother is supposed to come to Ireland, and
Saint Bridget's fucking with her too.
Why?
she fucks up the clock. And
can
has
you explain
her, like,
this to me? Like, why does she not want her mom to be there?
So that it doesn't. I guess, like, I
does mean, she think her mom would talk her into it?
I don't know.
Or maybe she just has to make this decision herself. Like, she leans on her mom too much.
Maybe.
But I feel like that wasn't explained.
Or she wouldn't go through with it if her mom wasn't there.
Right, maybe.
So she just kept delaying her, which was comical but stupid.
Yes, like, I don't understand like why this was part of it, to be honest. It really wasn't enough.
We didn't need the... Sorry, Jane Seymour. We didn't need the mom at all.
No, it wasn't enough of like a side plot. However, I will say the gate agent at the airport that she was dealing with might have been my favorite part of this whole movie. I thought she was fantastic.
She was good.
She was on screen for 30 seconds maybe, and I thought she did an amazing job, like comedic timing,
yeah,
the tone of her voice. I hope she does amazing things because I loved her.
Yeah, she was great.
So Maddie gets to the wedding rehearsal just in time for the kiss part of the ceremony because Emma had been standing in for her.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Emma. What a great friend. This is the other thing. It's like, if the roles were reversed, apparently, Emma would be just as ill-equipped to handle her feelings around Paul as Maddie is.
Yeah, because she's and just as quiet about it.
These are best friends. Like, you're not talking to each other, and you're willing to betray your best friend because she's openly, like, hitting on Paul.
Yeah.
And Maddie is, like, obviously, since she knows that they were together in another timeline, she has a close eye on the two of them.
Like, no, and I feel like from an outsider point of view, anybody in that timeline... they're not paying close attention to Emma's actions.
Right.
Whereas Maddie is like, I know exactly
right, she her knows. Feelings.
Which goes back to the whole thing. Like, why is everybody's intentions exactly the same except for Maddie's
right.
to change the story around? So it's like, I really don't get why they still have Emma pining over him when it's supposed to be her, like...
Yeah. Again, it feels like the wish response is incorrect to the wish that she made. If she had made a more vague wish of finding true love and she thought her true love was supposed to be Paul, then all of this would kind of make more sense as a plot to show her that he's not her true love. Whereas the movie is trying to say, instead, you wished for this, but we're not really going to give it to you. Like, we're only
giving... Which doesn't make sense. Yeah. Because that's not... You're not... She's not getting her wish then.
Right.
Her Irish
wish. So good. So anyway, they have this rehearsal dinner. And at the pub, when she was stuck in the pub with James, they order... This was the inspiration for the cocktail. Mm. He orders a Guinness and she's like, do you have white wine? I'm really not a beer person. And they were like, oh, don't say that too loudly in these parts. But she tries a sip of his and she's like, oh, it's nice. And so then at the rehearsal dinner, she's drinking a full fucking glass of Guinness.
No, the actual wedding, I think.
No, it was the rehearsal dinner.
Oh, okay.
And Paul is like, oh, you like beer now? And she's like, it's growing on me. And she's like, you had one sip of a Guinness last night and now you're having an entire glass of it? Okay. And then they play this game, this drinking game of like, how well does the couple know each other?
That was the weirdest.
Yeah, it was a weird game. And then there was like nobody confirming the answers because Paul gets asked the first two questions and he's wrong about both, and she just goes along with it because it's her, and she's like, yeah, no, he's totally right, and like nobody fact checks. Nobody cares.
And then they talk about the proposal,
right?
And she proposed to him. So yeah, she proposes to him,
which was a plot twist I did not really see coming, because I'm like writing in my notes, I'm like, oh, they're asking how he proposed, yada yada, and then I'm like, oh, but she proposed. Like, I did not really see that. And again, it's driving
home. It kind of made sense though.
Well, it's driving home the point that she wanted this and he didn't,
right?
But like, that actually hurt me a lot because I was just kind of like, oh, this feels so bad for her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for her to hear that and for her to realize that, like, she's trying to force something that's not there.
It's very it's cringy.
It's
very
sad. Cringy. Like, it's upsetting. And it's hard for us as outsiders. I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of when I've been obsessed with people who didn't feel the same way. And it's hard to see beyond that. But it's so much easier for people on the outside to say, like, oh, no, that's not going to work.
Yep.
But anyway, so this is, like, the end of my notes because I just, like, stopped taking notes.
Well, yeah, it is pretty much...
So the next day is the wedding, and she sees Paul and Emma have like a moment out in the garden at some point, and Emma is like obviously upset. She's crying. Paul leaves her. Like nothing happens, but it's obvious that they're.
They say something like, "This was." She says like, "This was one of the best nights of my life," which it's like. Okay, weird. But yeah. Oh, and I have to also make a point. He asks Maddie to edit his vows to her.
Right, and he sends her her own because, like, he wrote her vows for her. And
the whole thing was just so weird.
And she's like, "You wrote my vows?" And he's like, "Well, I'm the writer, but, like, you know, you can spruce them up a little bit." And she's like, fucking rude. Yeah, I mean, it's like, obviously not what she thought it was going to be.
No.
So she has another conversation with James in the morning as well. And he's like, "What are you doing? Like, why, yeah, why are like, you doing this?"
Obviously isn't the right fit. Right. I don't get it.
Which is funny because later he's like, I'm so sorry if I ever made you question yourself. And it's like, what? Like, you were trying to do that the whole time. Like, don't pretend. Because he can see from the beginning that they have nothing. Like, she and Paul have nothing in common. And there's no reason for them to be getting married. So finally, it seems like Maddie is also realizing that. But she's going to go through with this wedding. And she's getting dressed for it and everything. And it's not until she talks to Emma and she's like, "Emma, I know."
Right. And she like apologizes to her.
Right.
As if Emma's going to understand. What are you talking like?
Right. And Emma reveals like, "Yeah, no, we do have feelings for each other, but, you know, whatever." And it's just like the weirdest conversation between friends, because if you've gotten to the point of the wedding day and you haven't had this conversation, maybe you don't need to have it because there's nothing you can do now. But anyway, she's like, "I'm going to fix it." So, okay. We start the wedding. Everybody comes down the aisle. We're waiting for Maddie. When it's her turn to come down, there's a pause. And then she shows up in a casual dress, not her wedding dress. And everyone's like, "Oh my God, what the fuck is going on?" And she comes down the aisle and she makes this this big speech to everyone. Like, she doesn't even take anybody aside.
You know what it reminded me of?
Wedding Crashers?
No, her speech in Mean Girls.
Oh,
at
okay.
At the end when she's, I'm like, she just needs the tiara to like throw pieces to. Throw little pieces.
Everybody looks like a queen today.
Exactly. Everybody's a bride today. Especially you, Emma.
It should have been your wedding day. So she makes this whole speech about how she's not really in love with Paul and she needs to be with the person that she's actually in love with. And it could just be the person you weren't expecting, yada, yada. And like James is there and he's like, It's weird because Paul reacts weirdly
in
to
like
this.
A jealous way. Yeah, like you don't give a shit about her. What are you doing?
As though he didn't also want to be with Emma. And he actually he says that Emma is irrelevant.
That was
to the conversation.
That was kind of fucked up because he goes, "I saw you two," meaning
right.
Maddie and James talking this morning in the garden. And she goes, "Well, I could say the same about you and Emma last night." And right. He goes, "Well, that's irrelevant." And like just, and I'm like, ouch.
Yeah, burn. And she feels that way too. And it made me wonder about.
He's just a dude. Like, yes, I don't like him.
Yes, that made me question. Because now I'm like, do I want to root for Emma and him to be together anyway? Like, that feels wrong too.
Yeah.
Now, but whatever. So him and James end up getting into like fisticuffs over this, which is ridiculous. And they finally pull them off each other. And James is leaving. And Maddie goes after him. And she's trying to be like, "Yo, like, you're the person that I did this all for. Like, we should be together." And he's like, "I didn't want for any of this to happen. I didn't realize that I was making a question," which, again, bullshit. Like, obviously, he knew what he was doing. But he doesn't want her like this, is what he says, which is like, ouch.
Yeah. Like, so, what do you expect me to do? I'm correcting the wrong. Right. Like, and now you're going to tell me that I'm wrong. Like, it was weird.
Yeah, it was strange. So he leaves. She goes running off to the wish bench or wish chair or wish stone. Sofa. I don't know. And she gets St. Bridget to come back and she's like, "I want to reverse my wish." She's like, "Can't do it." And then she does it.
Yeah. She like doesn't even question her. She's like, "Yeah, no, that's why I was making this difficult the whole time." So boop.
Yeah, but acts like she's not going to do it. She just disappears. And then Maddie sits down on the chair and makes the wish. But then, like, nothing happens. And then she comes to because she doesn't wake up this time. She's blow drying her hair. Mm-hmm. And she comes to and is like, wow, that was fucking weird. And it's once again Emma and Paul's wedding day. Everything is as it should be, right?
Yeah, and for some reason she finally has, she has her luggage.
Yes, we were never really told how or why that comes about.
Because then Heather comes in and is like, you need to get, it's the wedding day. And she's like, you need to get in this dress.
Right, she's like, oh, my dress, it's here. It's like, yeah, how did that get there?
Not wrinkled, by the way.
Yeah, we don't know.
How?
We don't know how it got there. So we go through the day, the wedding is fine, yada, yada. She stands up to Paul and is like, I'm not going to help you with your book unless I get co-writing.
Yeah, because he was like, well, they love the in the States, the book's selling so well. They want, you know, they want the next one right away. And since I'm going to be on my honeymoon, like, can you get started on it? It's like, fuck off. No.
Right. So she's standing up for herself now. She's got more of a backbone. And she's like, fuck you. I'm not going to do that. And then she goes off to find James. And she remembers where he said he was going to be staying while he was in town. She goes there. He's not there. But she goes back outside and he's just sitting on a random bench.
That's the bench I thought was in...
Yeah, with the bus stop.
Yes,
okay.
It looked exactly the same.
Maybe it was. We don't know that it's not. And so he must recognize her from the bus because they're back, I guess, on the original timeline. And he makes the comment about her trying to steal his bag. And then he says, after I got off the bus, I ran into a weird woman who, like, convinced me to stay because he was originally going to go to Bolivia to photograph some lizards or something.
Yeah, something like
that. But then he's like, no, I'm gonna stay now. So it was the weird woman Saint Bridget.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay. That fucking bitch. She's everywhere. And so
but like, did he make a wish?
No, maybe we don't see it.
So she just shows up to whoever's in the timeline of the person that's making the wish.
I guess she had, well, she was actively trying to get these two together, so I assume that was her ultimate goal, whatever. So then Maddie implies that she's going to stay in Ireland for some
however
time.
Long it takes.
Yes, however long it takes, because she's going to write her own book now. So that's the end, right?
But I liked that ending because it wasn't like a typical,
we're going to get married.
Love, we're going to get married now. Or...
Yeah, it was like, we're going to see where this goes.
Yeah.
But we know they're going to get married.
Yeah, but it's also just, I did like the open-endedness of it. That it wasn't just so...
I also do think, I find it more believable that she would stay in Ireland because it didn't seem like she had too much tying her to
America. No, it was him, really.
And right. It's like... And writers can go anywhere. They can can write from anywhere. So, I mean, she does work for a publisher, so I don't know how that pans out necessarily, but she does feel like the type of person who would be able to make a new life in a different country and not have it be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was Irish Wish. There were things I liked about it. There were things I didn't like about it.
Yeah, it wasn't, if you had to, out of Falling for Christmas in this one, which was the better?
Oh, great question. It's hard actually to say because I think I liked Falling for Christmas better.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard to say why, because I did like James so much.
I know.
I liked him a lot better than her romantic interest in Falling for Christmas. Plus, they had the child in that movie, and I'm not, you know,
yeah.
I don't need the child. But I thought that the concept of this movie, while less problematic than the Amnesia love-based story, I felt like it wasn't as good of a role for her. Like the character she was playing in this movie was a bit less likable and relatable than the character in Falling for Christmas.
Yeah, I get that.
Not that I'm like a major heiress or something and I lost my memory. Like I don't have any direct experience with that. But but I think she felt more down to earth in that movie. In this movie it felt like she was playing a character.
Yeah.
Like a stereotypical like teenager in love, and it was like, but you're a grown woman.
That's true. Yeah, and I wonder like if this is gonna be her
niche now.
Her niche going forward. Because yeah, but she's just like, she's revamped, so I feel like she could really do whatever she puts her mind to now.
But maybe this is what she wants to do.
Yeah, that's
maybe
true.
She likes doing the rom-coms. I like seeing her in them. I do think that there's something very likable about her, and she has good comedic timing. She has good chemistry, not just with male characters, but with female characters. I think she's electric to watch. And in a movie like this, where the plot is kind of thin and unsatisfying, she makes it more watchable.
Yeah.
And I felt that way about Falling for Christmas, too. I'm here for Lindsay. And that's pretty much it. And in this movie, I was here for Lindsay and for James.
Yeah, James sold it for me. Mm-hmm. 100%. And I'm glad we had him because I really hated Paul.
I know.
From the get-go, I was like, I don't like you.
I don't approve of this.
nothing about you is redeeming. No,
he wasn't even that attractive.
No.
So explain that, Madeline.
Yeah, like, what about, like, what are you doing, wrote his books, girl? So not his writing.
What are you doing? Yeah, right? He's not this intellectual mastermind.
So what sold you, really?
It's one thing if, like, in 27 Dresses, when she fell in love with him because of the articles that he wrote about the weddings and stuff, you know? Like,
right, that was...
That was from his heart. But this guy, he was going to kill the lovers in chapter 10, like he said in the beginning. He's like, without you, this would not have been a love story, basically. And it's like, well, what the fuck are you doing with this man? Not to mention the strong mama's boy vibes.
Oh, bad. It was bad.
So bad. You're going to be dealing with that for the rest of your life.
Now, question. Did Emma wear the same dress that she...
No. Okay. No, and they made a comment about it, too, where she was like, thanks for helping me, like, put my foot down. Or there was something...
I was going to say, because if it was the same, that. It did not look great on Emma.
No, but it didn't. It was ill-fitting anyway. The dress she chose was not better than the one that the mother-in-law wanted for her, but whatever.
Whatever. Today I saw on Vulture, there was an article about this movie, and the title of it is, Irish Wish is a crypto-fascist, AI-generated harbinger of doom.
Wow, that feels really dramatic.
And then the description... because this is just the Instagram post about it, says from the woman that wrote the article, Rachel Handler. She says, I attempted to identify and examine Irish Wish's most troubling moments, which ended up being the entire movie from start to finish, which I watched twice while feeling the walls of reality melt around me.
Wow. Okay.
I would read Calm the rest down, of the article, Rachel. But I think she got a little too involved in this movie.
You know, I do feel like sometimes people, we might be guilty of this as well, because the basis of our podcast is to criticize movies that are not good. But I do think that we tend to come at it with a fairly open mind, and that if a movie is not as bad as we think, we can give it credit where credit is due.
Exactly.
But I think there are some people out there who their one goal is to just tear things to pieces, and it sounds like maybe that's Rachel's job.
When I saw that, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, this,
what a strongly worded title for
seriously
an article
to get so angry about a movie like this. That I mean, was it really fun? No, but it was kind of fun.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not like it was made to be Oscar-worthy. It didn't hurt anybody. Like, it's not, you're right, it didn't hurt anybody. You're not, oh my God, yeah. That
so
just,
what was AI about it? Like, I wonder, is
that like, it was written in AI?
Maybe that was the implication, was that it was written by AI. I wonder if it was. We're going to have to read the article now. We'll let you know.
Yeah. Or, you know, you can find it on Vulture yourself.
I can honestly see why they might think it was written by AI, because it does fall into some of the typical tropes, and like some of the movie didn't really seem to make sense within itself.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen movies that were written by humans with the exact same problems. So.
And much worse. So yeah, and it's much not, worse. You know, listen, it was supposed to be just a fun rom-com. Like, right. Let's let it be what it's supposed to be.
Right. We're not rewriting Shakespeare here.
No.
It's fine.
But that was our cute little rom-com of the month. And
yes, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. And next week...
we're taking a hard left turn.
We're taking a hard left. I will admit to you, I've watched it already. Oh, boy.
Is it bad?
It is horrible.
Oh, no.
Definitely join us for this. And if you want to watch it, it is on Tubi. The Bunny Man Massacre. You know, we wanted to go with, you know, a little Easter. Bunny. It does not reflect Easter in any way. Don't worry about that.
Just and a man in a bunny suit.
Honestly, that's what it should have been called. So yeah, so definitely tune in next week. Keep up to date with us on Twitter, Instagram, website. And, you know, we'll have April movies soon, which I feel like time is just flying.
Oh my God, seriously.
And yeah, is there anything you would like to add?
Oh my God. I mean, aside from St. Patrick's Day, which we've already wished you to have a happy, March 21st has a lot of things going on. I'm just trying to select one that feels good. I like National French Bread Day.
Okay.
Or international, I guess it must be. But I love bread, so that is going to be a thing I celebrate. And then there is also National Crunchy Tacos Day.
Okay.
Are you a crunchy or soft shell?
Soft.
Oh, see, I don't understand this. I love a crunchy taco shell. I don't like flaccid taco shells. I need
when
that,
you put it like that. Crunch.
Yeah, exactly. You like flaccid tacos, Dawn?
The only thing I like flaccid. Thank you very much.
Ooh, she got me. She got me there. And then one more. Hold on. I have one more. It's National Common Courtesy Day.
Well, that's
so
nice.
So everyone be courteous to your friends, coworkers, neighbors, strangers, people wherever you find them.
And not just today. Do that every day.
Yeah, but, you know, go out of your way today. Just yeah. Remind yourself that.
And others.
And yeah.
Feel free.
Be courteous.
It says it on the calendar.
I used to be really, really aggressive about courtesy waves when I was like driving, when I was first learning to drive. Mm. So I would give courtesy waves all the time because I was like, I just want people to know how courteous I am. So here's
I still do it. And when people wave. Don't do it back, I'm like,
yeah,
fuck
you. I always say that quote out loud to myself from Wedding Crashers when Vince Vaughn is making the balloon animals for the kids at the wedding. He's like, take it, you hyena. Yeah. Don't say thank you. That's what I say whenever I let somebody do something nice in traffic and then they don't thank me in any way. I'm like, don't say thank you.
Oh, I just say like, you're welcome all the time. I feel like that's just standard because people are trash. But again.
But also be courteous to them.
But please, today, be courteous to them.
Except for those assholes.
Or not.
You be the better person.
Yeah, don't be the asshole.
And until next time.